For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero. Don't forget to tune in next week when my wonderful co-host Dana Lake will be returning. We're here every Sunday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. covering a wide variety of topics related to health and wellness. Today, of course, I have a great show lined up for you. I'm actually really excited. It's probably been about 6 or 8 months that I've been looking for a guest to be on the show with me for the topic today. And the topic that we're going to be covering is eating disorders. And the reason why I feel it's such an important issue to cover is in my career, I have worked with many people with eating disorders, and I have found that I, in my education, didn't receive adequate training to deal with the complex issues around eating disorders. And although I have always known and been aware of that and always created a team around the cases that involve eating disorders, it's something that I feel that I need more education about. I feel a level of frustration in working with people with eating disorders because I don't have that level of education. And I think it is such an important topic that is incredibly ignored and isn't paid as much attention to as other issues and mental health issues like anxiety or depression. So I'm just thrilled to have on the phone with me today, Joanna Candle. And I'm going to introduce her, but I'm really excited because I think it's a really interesting story, and she brings a perspective to it from somebody who has been through an eating disorder. So Joanna is the founder and executive director of the Alliance for Eating Disorders Awareness. She struggled with her eating disorder for 10 years before finally getting help. Now fully recovered, Joanna knows firsthand how difficult the healing process can be. Through her work with the Alliance, leading support groups, speaking nationwide, and collaborating with professionals in the field, she's developed a set of practical tools to address the everyday challenges of recovery. And I'm reading that right off of the wonderful book that Joanna has written called Life Beyond Your Eating Disorder. And I've read a fair amount of portions of the book, and it is just a really, compelling story of someone who has been through the trenches with one of these conditions and her personal story of what she went through and how she had come to recovery and the most useful tools that she used. And it's a wonderful guidebook. So, Joanna, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I've been really looking forward to speaking with you.
Great. So I wanted you to first, because as we talked about last night in our pre-interview, I felt your book is really compelling. And, the way that you share so much of your personal story and your personal struggles, it really just kind of invites us into some of the most intimate aspects of your life and your struggle with the eating disorder. And I would just I encourage everybody to pick up the book and read it if they want to learn more about eating disorders or if there's somebody struggling with one. But I was just wondering if you could take a few minutes and, explain or share with people, your story and what you went through.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I guess to begin at the real beginning, I have to go back to my parents, and both of my parents grew up in not the best type of conditions. My father is a survivor of the Holocaust, and my mother came from very, very, very humble beginnings. I mean, she was one of 7 children, and there were 14 of them living in a 1-bedroom apartment. So food was not a luxury. It was a necessity, mm-hmm. You were very lucky if you got food on a daily basis. And so when they immigrated over to the United States and they had me, they really wanted to give me every opportunity that they never had. You know, neither of them had been able to finish even high school. So it was very important for me to be everything I could be, a lawyer, a doctor, and a nuclear physicist, you know, one mm-hmm. of the three. So from a very early age, I definitely was given the message that I had to be the best. I don't know if that was direct or indirect, but, you know, A minuses were not okay. It was just A's. You know, I'm disappointed in you if you haven't done well. And so I took on this perfectionistic trait very, very, very early on in life. I really had low self-esteem growing up. At the age of 3, my parents actually took me to a Mommy and Me ballet class because I was walking with my feet turned in. I was pigeon-toed. So they thought, you know, hey, why not? Let's take her to ballet. It'll give her poise. It'll give her strength. And it'll turn her feet out. Much to their dismay, I ended up falling in love with ballet. It was just took my heart away. I remember being in a ballet studio and seeing a professional dancer with pink tights, tutu, and a pointe shoe, and I just knew at that moment that that's what I wanted to do with my life. And so I started training pretty aggressively from a very young age. By the time I was 7, I was dancing 4 days a week. By the time I was 10, I was spending the summers away at summer programs for ballet schools. I remember specifically the summer between my 6th and 7th grade year. I had been in New York at a summer program and came home, and I was amongst, you know, 15 of my peers, and a majority of them were a lot older than I was. And I remember the ballet mistress from the professional company in which I went to the academy of came in and said, "We have a wonderful opportunity for you guys. We're going to give you a chance to audition to dance next to all the professional dancers in the Nutcracker. The only caveat is that we need you all to lose weight before an audition." And, you know, she was really not speaking to me. I was barely 12. I was very prepubescent, very, very thin. But because of that people pleaser and because of that perfectionistic attitude, whatever she would have said at that moment, I would have agreed to. And so I remember going home and talking to my mom and telling her, "Mom, I want to go on a healthy food diet." Now, at this point in my life, I was what you would consider a junk food junkie. If it didn't have the word Twinkie or Ho-Ho in the title or macaroni and cheese, it wasn't part of my daily diet. And so she got really excited. You know, here her daughter was going to eat broccoli and fruits and vegetables. And so she was very supportive. And that's how it started. You know, I just started eating a lot more healthfully. And much to my dismay, I auditioned, and I was the only girl out of 15 of us that didn't get the part.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled me aside, and they said, "You know, Joanna, the reason why you didn't get the part is not because you're not a good dancer. On the contrary, it's just that you look so young." And I wish I could tell you I heard them say that, but because they had made such an emphasis on weight and because I had made it such a big deal in my mind, what I, in fact, heard her say was, "You didn't get the part because you were too big."
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, I made a pact to myself that next year, when I re-auditioned, I would be thin enough. And it's not like at that moment I turned around and looked outside my window and said, "You know, I'm becoming anorexic today." It was just that I'm going to become just a little stricter, have a little bit more willpower, lose just a little bit of weight, and then I'll be good. Well, that, you know, innocent diet or healthy lifestyle, as I liked to, you know, call it at that time, which wasn't so healthy, very quickly turned into an eating disorder. I started restricting my food a little bit more and started exercising a little bit more. And very interestingly, people around me started to make comments. "Wow, Joanna, you've lost weight. You look so great. Wow, how are you doing it?" And it made me feel good. For the first time in my life, I felt like I was good at something. And so I thought, you know what? This is great. I'm going to just lose a little bit more, and then I'll be good. And you can only imagine, it was just like Alice in Wonderland chasing that white rabbit down the rabbit hole. As soon as I got close to a number, there was always another number waiting for me right around the corner. And it's very important for me to stop here and say that, you know, my eating disorder at that point, you know, it might have started about food and weight, but it very quickly turned into so much more. When I was restricting or not eating or, you know, contemplating how many calories or looking up everything, by doing that, I was escaping from my life. It was the way that I was actually coping with my life.
Mm-hmm.
It became so much more than just the food. And so my eating disorder continued all through middle school and even all through high school. people's voices and comments started to change. Wow, Joanna, are you okay? You don't look very good. The only two people that didn't really make a comment were my parents. And, you know, it pains my heart to say this, but they were in such denial because they didn't know better. I was the kid that was, you know, the good child, the goody two shoes that never gave them any problems. And they had never known about eating disorders ever. You know, for them, right. If they got food on a daily basis, it was a good thing. It wasn't until my senior year of high school where I was actually changing in the bathroom, and I always made sure to close doors and wear lots of baggy clothes because, for me, I was so ashamed of my body that I didn't want anybody else to see it. And I think also I didn't want my parents to see how thin I had gotten because I didn't want them to take it away from me.
Mm-hmm.
But that night I happened to because, of course, one of the side effects of not eating is you're not nourishing your brain either. And I became very foggy-brained. My grades started to drop. You know, even though I was always a straight-A student, I couldn't maintain everything anymore. And I was changing in the bathroom, and my mom happened to walk by at that moment, and she looked into the bathroom, and she saw what she had been, you know, denying for so many years. And, you know, I remember her pushing the door in and coming into the bathroom and shaking me and, you know, saying, oh, my God, Joanna, you're going to die, and crying, just crying. And I was so afraid that she was going to take it away from me that I made up every excuse in the book. I'm okay. I'm just tired. It's fine. Well, she didn't believe me, and rightfully so. And the next morning, she took me to the doctor, or my regular pediatrician, and you know, he put me on the scale, and I was extremely, extremely underweight at that point. But yet, he just looked at my mom and said, "Oh, you know, she's a little thin, but she's okay. Why don't you go home and just feed her some good French food, and she'll be fine."
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a topic that I think we're definitely going to talk about. The issue of, you know, undereducated providers missing things. And I mean, that is just a terrible story of somebody, you know, not only your parents being, well, your parents finally coming out of denial, but then the provider being in total denial, probably because they either don't know enough about it, or even if they did acknowledge that you maybe had some kind of eating disorder, not knowing how to handle it, not knowing who to refer you to, not having any resources. And so just sort of passing the buck. And I think I want to talk about that definitely, but I just, there's a couple things. I mean, you know, when I was reading your book, you know, the quote, I mean, I read this probably three or four times over. This is related to when you didn't make the cut at the ballet company. Say, I don't actually know if I lost any weight on my quote unquote healthy diet, but I auditioned. And out of the 15 girls in my class, I was the only one not chosen for a part. And I mean, I read that four or five times over because, you know, when I read it, my heart just sank. And I think all of us can identify with, you know, adolescent struggles of either being not in the cool group or being the last person picked for a basketball team or a soccer team or some kind of major, you know, disappointment where we know as a child we're just emotionally not equipped to deal with those things. And I think, you know, as we're going to talk about, there are so many different factors that go into developing a problem like an eating disorder, just like developing depression or anxiety. And although we don't want to say that this was the main trigger, there were obviously some predispositions for you, you know, and some of the other issues. But events like this, I mean, it just resonated with me, you know, and I didn't have a particularly tough childhood with these types of things, but I think anybody can feel for a child that feels that sense of rejection. And, you know, I also think it's interesting as you talk about so many people have this concept that eating disorders are just related to how a person perceives their body. They think they're too big. They think, you know, the concept of body dysmorphia, they think it's all about just the food or about this person and their image of their body. But I think you bring up such a great point when you share your story that the eating disorder for you created a sense of control. You controlled your calories. You controlled your food. It was almost a coping mechanism to deal with some of the other issues that you were dealing with psychologically. And I think that's another really important point that we're going to touch upon when we talk about, you know, why people get eating disorders. So I just wanted to bring up those two points, and I hope I brought them up and represented them in a way that you would agree with.
Very, very much so.
Okay.
And I'm so glad that you reinforced that because I actually just this morning got a phone call from someone that, you know, who is in recovery from bulimia. And, you know, she said, I'm really happy that you talk about the fact that eating disorders, you know, are just not about food and weight. She said the first time that I actually purged, was I was at the gym and I was a competitive athlete and I didn't want to be an athlete anymore. I just didn't want to compete anymore. Mm. And I was at the gym and I got so worked up that I ended up getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
And she said at that moment there was some type of release and relief that happened internally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how her eating disorder started.
Yes.
So I'm so glad that you reinforced that point, because eating disorders are so not about the food. It's
yep.
so not about the weight. It definitely might have started out for the, in that manner for me, but very quickly it turns into something so much bigger and so much more than food and calories.
Yep.
And it really reinforces the fact that recovery from an eating disorder is not just as simple as, okay, start eating or
right.
stop eating, you
sure.
know? So I'm really glad that you did bring that up.
Sure. So we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick up this conversation. We're going to talk about some of the misconceptions in the medical field. We're going to talk about some concepts that contribute to why people get eating disorders. We're going to bring up topics like, if you know someone, a loved one, a family member, friend that has an eating disorder, how to approach them about it. We're going to talk about strategies for people who are coping with eating disorders. So we got a ton of information to get through. This is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, and we're going to be back right after this break.
Since 1973, Megafood has been providing supplements which harness the power of phytonutrient-rich whole foods. For optimum nutrition and true vitality, we need foods which have not been damaged by heat. Megafood's state-of-the-art cold fusion process naturally protects the delicate phytonutrients present in whole food. Supplement daily with an easy-to-digest Megafood formula and enjoy the best that food has to offer. For information, call 800-848-2542.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of Fit Food, a delicious, high-quality, functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of Fit Food contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCTs. Fit Food provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
For over 30 years, Gero Formulas has been formulating high-quality nutritional products. Our scientists and health professionals insist on doing things the old-fashioned way, with clinical studies and scientific research, because the true test of a company is the purity, potency, and value of its products, and meeting the highest expectations of those who matter most, our customers. To learn more about our formulas and to request free samples, visit JARROW.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500 Federal News Radio. I am your host, Dr. Kevin Passero. Don't forget to tune in next week when my wonderful co-host Dana Lake will be returning. Don't forget, we're brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, located right here in Bethesda, Maryland. We've been serving the health and wellness of the Bethesda area for over 40 years. They have a wonderful pharmacy, a full-service compounding pharmacy that can make custom vitamins and nutritional products for you, as well as over 15,000 different nutritional products, everything from supplements and herbs to skincare products. We have a wonderful staff with herbalists, nutritionists, all sorts of resources. So if you haven't stopped in and you need some health and wellness needs, please come in. It is a wonderful resource in our community, extremely unique. So today we've been talking about eating disorders. I have on the phone with me today a wonderful special guest, Joanna Kendall, who is the author of Life Beyond Your Eating Disorder. She has been through eating disorders herself. And I think in this segment, Joanna, I wanted you to go ahead and finish up your story. You shared the first part of your story with us in the last segment. But if you could talk about some other aspects of your story with us, I think that'd be great.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I believe we left off was when, you know, I went to the doctor and of course he did not diagnose my eating disorder, actually the farthest from it. And luckily about a month later, my mother knew something was up. So she actually brought me to yet another doctor who wasn't very trained in eating disorders, but knew enough to identify, assess, and diagnose. And so he diagnosed me with anorexia. I was 17 and a half at the time. And his biggest concern was the fact that I had never menstruated. So for him, he really pushed me to figure out what was going on. They took me to fertility specialists, and they tried to fix me medically, yet not psychologically. So what they did is they gave me hormones and steroids and appetite stimulants, and in a matter of a few months, I, in fact, totally lost quote-unquote control. My body weight doubled, and I was totally lost. And for the first time, I actually started using food. I actually went towards food as a numbing mechanism, just the same way that people use alcohol and drugs. And so I was binging. I was stuffing to escape the anxiety, the depression that was associated with that time. And I wish I could tell you that my story ends there and that I got help there, but ultimately I kept on going back to the restricting and the binging and some purging as well. I had to stop dancing because, you know, my doctors and my family thought that, you know, ballet was a huge contributor to my eating disorder, and they thought, you know, well, if you take the ballet out of the equation, then obviously the eating disorder will go away. And I have to admit that part of me thought so too, you know, that it was dance that really caused my eating disorder. And as we know now, there was so much more that played into it. But I had no plans for my life post-dance. You know, I had graduated from high school. I thought I was going to be a ballet dancer forever. And so I really had to take an introspective look to say, okay, well, who am I? I don't know who I am or what I like. The only thing I knew as I knew about dance was my eating disorder. So I made a pact to myself that if I ever got better, that I would do everything in my power to help others, because I knew that this was happening to me for a reason, or I had to get past this. I was very afraid, but I knew that there was a possibility. So I enrolled in a local university, and I started, you know, studying psychology because I wanted to figure out what was going on in this head of mine. And unfortunately, I was still binging. I was still abusing food. And, you know, at that point, my body weight did become, you know, pretty heavy. I became pretty much obese at that point. And it wasn't until my last semester of college where I just couldn't deal with it anymore. I picked up the phone and I called my parents and I said, you know, Mom, Dad, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. I wanted to live again. I was barely even surviving, and I wanted to thrive at some point. I was scared to change because I didn't know what recovery meant or if it was an opportunity or an option for me, but I knew I had to try. And so I entered into an intensive outpatient program where, you know, I went there for 8 hours a day, and we started to peel back those layers. And, you know, I thought my recovery was going to be perfect. I had decided to you know, get better, and that's what would happen. It is so not what happened, you know. Mm-hmm. The recovery process is not black and white. It doesn't happen overnight. It's filled with twists and turns and divots and potholes and everything you can imagine. But all of a sudden, things start getting just a little bit easier. And I'm proud to say that I'm 10 years recovered now from my eating disorders. And through this process, I stayed true to my pact, and right after I graduated from my undergraduate program, I was getting ready to go to graduate school, and I thought, you know what? What I really, really want to do is I want to talk to that seventh grade me who thought that a healthy diet was the option. And so in October of 2000, I founded the Alliance for Eating Disorders as a way to give back to the community and to really create a voice and a conversation and a dialogue about eating disorders. And so for over the last 10 years, I've spoken to over 150,000 people across the country. We've done presentations, outreach, education. I hold support groups. I mentor individuals that are going through the recovery process. And the biggest thing that I try to do through the organization is really promote the idea that help is available and recovery really is possible. People can and do recover.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is certainly a wonderful message. Can you talk about, just briefly, you know, what are the three main types of eating disorders as, you know, you would describe them, just so people can get familiar with the landscape of the disease?
Absolutely. Well, anorexia, which is probably a thing that comes to mind when we think about eating disorders, is a self-induced starvation resulting from a distorted body image and an intense fear of gaining weight. People have this misconception that anorexics don't eat anything. That's actually not true. Some of them might restrict completely, but the majority will not eat enough to maintain a daily lifestyle. When they look in the mirror, they have that funhouse effect. So what they're seeing in the mirror is not actually what you and I are seeing. It's really a distortion. Bulimia nervosa, which is binging and purging, and I want to be very clear that binging means, you know, to take in a lot in a short period of time, and purging means to get rid of. It's not just eating and throwing up, it's actually eating and getting rid of, and people purge through laxatives, through diuretics, and through exercise. 75 to 85% of bulimics are actually normal weight, so weight is not an indicator with bulimia. And then finally, binge eating disorder, which was up until very recently called compulsive overeating, is binge eating without the compensatory behavior of purging. So there's no getting rid of. Individuals will eat to numb, to stuff, to self-medicate, to escape. And they're eating as a way of coping with what's going on in their lives.
So let's talk about some of the factors that play into why people get eating disorders. Because I think the more research that's done about it and the more comes out, the more we're starting to understand. And you talk about, you know, in your book, some moments that, you know, were helpful for you in understanding why you maybe were predisposed to this. You know, and I think that's a huge piece of recovery and of self-forgiveness and of making better choices, is not just blaming yourself that, you know, I'm messed up and I have this problem and I'm just, you know, it's just all in my head. When we start to actually identify physiological issues and problems, and as science starts to reveal more details about why people are prone to these, I think it helps people cope with the issue of why they have it, which I think helps ultimately with recovery. So maybe you can explain some of the different factors that go into what might predispose someone to developing an eating disorder.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, in 2007, Dr. Thomas Insel, who is the director of the National Institute of Mental Health, wrote a letter to the National Eating Disorders Association stating that they have found through research that anorexia is in fact a brain disease. And that actually might sound very like, wow, okay, brain disease. But it actually shed a huge light for a lot of us that were struggling. I always had a huge amount of culpability on my back, that huge brick in my backpack, thinking, how did I let this happen? How could I do this to myself? People don't choose to have eating disorders. Basically, what we know is that 50 to 80% of the cause of eating disorders is genetic. Now, basically, what that means is that genetics will sort of load that proverbial gun, and the environment will actually pull the trigger. So just because you're predisposed doesn't mean that you will end up with an eating disorder. You definitely need that environmental trigger. And for me, those environmental trigger pulls was a combination of like my inherent character traits. Mm-hmm. So my perfectionism, my people pleaser, I didn't have a type A personality. I had like a type AAA personality, mm-hmm. you know. So those were definitely inherent character traits of mine. On top of the fact that for me, I was a ballet dancer, because there was such, you know, extreme pressure put on in my household to be perfect. I think all of that combined to make the perfect storm and did that trigger pull. Now, those are not the only factors. For example, traumatic experiences can also be that quote-unquote trigger pull. Now, let's be aware that there really is a continuum of trauma. You know, for some people it can be as traumatic as, you know, your mind will let you go. But for some people, it can be one comment. One of the women that I work with, her traumatic experience was when she was 4 years old. A boy on the playground called her elephant legs, and for a very long time, she, you know, associated that with her. Also, comorbid, you know, psychological disorders like depression and anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder, abuse. A lot of times, you know, actually upwards of 50% of individuals with eating disorders have had some type of abuse in their history. Also, if an individual engages in you know, drugs and alcohol abuse, oftentimes you'll see. In fact, there was a study that came out in Self Magazine that said 72% of alcoholic women under the age of 30 actually also have an eating disorder. So you see all these other factors that come into play. Another predisposition factor would be, you know, individuals that engage in sports where it's weight regulated, for example, wrestling or dancing or, you know, modeling, where there is a weight criteria. So all of those are factors.
That's great. Thank you for sharing those. I mean, I just, real quick, before we take the next break, I mean, I want to read from page 36 of your book. You talk about, you know, various researchers have linked the problem to the disruption of serotonin levels in the brain. Serotonin is a neurotransmitter, a brain chemical whose functions include the regulation of both mood and appetite. Some researchers have theorized that increased serotonin levels may leave people in a perpetual state of anxiety, leading them to gain some sense of control by restricting food intake. Low serotonin levels, on the other hand, could lead to binging on foods high in carbohydrates, which would temporarily raise serotonin levels and elevate mood. And I think it's important to read because we know serotonin is this brain neurotransmitter that is, you know, just associated now with depression and anxiety. All of the newer generation of drugs that are used to treat anxiety and depression are oftentimes working on modulating serotonin levels. Mm-hmm. So again, I think that it's you know, important to bring awareness around it, just because things like depression and anxiety are so accepted in our society, but eating disorders are not. Not nearly as well accepted as depression and anxiety are. And, you know, I mean, last night we talked about a few reasons why that might be, and we can talk about that when we come back from the break. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500 Federal News Radio, and we're going to be back right after this break.
Whether you're an active baby boomer, a weekend warrior, or a professional athlete, Boron's Arnicare Gel is the perfect solution to all life's little injuries. Arnicare, which contains the healing benefits of homeopathic Arnica Montana, can be used safely to treat muscle pain, stiffness, swelling, and bruising due to minor injuries, overexertion, and surgery. The non-greasy gel has no artificial colors, perfumes, or parabens. Arnicare is also available in cream and ointment formulas. You can find Arnicare at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Arnicare on the web at arnicare.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. They are the only raw multivitamin to include live enzymes and probiotics, amino acids, and antioxidants. They are gluten and dairy free with no soy allergens. Vitamin Code is uncooked, untreated, unadulterated, and binder free. Vitamin Code Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Get the one tiny pearl that delivers big acidophilus, 900% more. Get acidophilus pearls from Enzymatic Therapy. Each little pearl-shaped capsule makes a big impact, delivering up to 900% more live probiotics to the intestine than other products. This revolutionary product aids digestion, supports a healthy immune system, and is perfect for travelers who want to enhance intestinal health. This season, make sure to take the pearls that give you big acidophilus. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D, with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, Federal News Radio. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero. Don't forget, we're brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, a wonderful health and wellness pharmacy located right here in Bethesda, Maryland. Been here for over 40 years. Feel free to stop in if you have any health and wellness questions. Today, is an exciting show. We're talking with Joanna Kendall, author of Life Beyond Your Eating Disorder, a wonderful book about her stories and struggles in recovery and recovering from eating disorders. She has also founded the Alliance for Eating Disorder Awareness, which is a nonprofit organization completely dedicated to educating people about eating disorders and recovering from eating disorders. We've been having a wonderful conversation this morning, and Joanna has been so kind to share with us her personal story that is also outlined in her book. In this segment, we wanted to touch on a couple other things. We have so many things that, you know, we want to talk about today. I mean, we had just in the last segment finished up talking about some of the different factors that contribute to why people get eating disorders. Before we, you know, run out of time in the rest of our show, I really want to talk about helping people with recovery from eating disorders. So if you're someone out there who's listening that's dealing with an eating disorder, or you're a mother or father or friend or teacher, or you know somebody that might have one, you know, I want to talk to you about what is a successful model for recovering from an eating disorder. What kind of team do you have to put around you? You know, there's inpatient programs, there's outpatient programs, there's psychiatrists and psychologists who specialize, nutritionists, there's, you know, all sorts of different things out there. In your experience in working with people with these conditions, you know, how do you create a successful model for recovery?
Well, I think the first thing that we have to keep in mind is that no two recoveries are going to be identical. What may work for one person might not specifically exactly work for another. So I think my first bit of feedback would be, number one, is if you think someone that you know, that you love, is struggling with an eating disorder, don't sort of brush it under the rug and expect that it'll go away. That's very important. I always tell people to learn about eating disorders. Don't learn too much about eating disorders. You know, don't become like overread, because then you, I think, can get pulled in too many directions. But definitely learn about eating disorders. And then I would say, plan on a time to approach that person by yourself, just you and that person. When you speak to them, make sure to use I statements. Talk from the heart. I always tell people to talk from the heart. Don't accuse. Don't scream. Don't tell them what you think they need. You know, say, I'm concerned about you. I care about you. This is what I've noticed, you know, and I want you to know that I'm here for you. And whenever you're ready, which they might definitely not be ready to share with you, just know that I'm here. And once that individual says, okay, you know, I really need help, or I want help, or, you know, if you're dealing with a child that's under the age of 18, the first thing you want to do is really locate an eating disorder therapist.
So let's back up. Can we back up for one quick second?
Sure.
And, you know, we're going to keep this train of thought, but I think it's an important point to bring up. You know, you talk about in your book how, you know, you had been brought to many different people, but, mm-hmm. you know, until you were ready for your recovery, it was a very difficult thing to do. And,
sure.
you know, when we talk about eating disorders, you know, with anxiety and depression, I mean, people are more willing to go out there and get treated with an eating disorder. And the way people are using the food, or the restriction of food, as you talk about in your case, it's almost like a drug in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. it's giving you this sense of control. It's giving you this mm-hmm. sense of this coping mechanism. But when we talk about recovery from drug use, it's almost accepted to do sort of an extreme intervention, you know, and send people away, or, you know, totally pull people off of things. And again, they don't always work. And I think it's those same tricky issues arise in dealing with an eating disorder that aren't present oftentimes when dealing with just anxiety or depression. So, I mean, you know, what do you do if you're a loved one of somebody who is not ready to recover, or they're not ready to make that step? You know, how do you, what's the best thing to do as somebody as a loved one or a friend in that situation?
you know, as painful as it is, unfortunately, if you're dealing with someone who's 18 and older, you have to be patient. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say that. Basically, what you have to do is ally yourself with the person. And I know that that sounds very funny, but what I mean by allying yourself with a person is, you know, be there for the person, be a support system. You know, make sure to reiterate the fact that you are there for them, that you support them, that you love them. In fact, you can even say to them, you know, I would love to even take you to your first appointment, not go in with you, but just take you to the appointment. And just know that it's going to take a long time. And just like you pointed out, just previously, is that you're not going to approach this the same way that you approach someone who's abusing drugs and alcohol, because you're not going to have an intervention, because mm-hmm. that person is going to feel like their control is completely taken away. So it's an arduous road, and it's awful, because we have to keep in mind that anorexia has the highest mortality rate of all psychological disorders. Upwards of 20% of individuals that struggle with anorexia will die from the disease. So, you know, it's that balance of being supportive, you know, being an ally to that person, but not letting the eating disorder manipulate you either.
Right. Okay.
You know, so, and when you get to that point of, you know, hopefully it comes sooner rather than later, when, you know, that the individual is ready for help, or if, again, like I said, if you're dealing with someone under 18, you want to go first to a specialist, an eating disorder specialist. And I say this to all the people that I work with is, you know, you would never go to get open heart surgery from a podiatrist, you know, so you really do want to go to someone that has experience with eating disorders. And you can do that by, you know, calling us at the Alliance. You can call the National Eating Disorders Association, and getting referrals to individuals that are specialized. And then it is about creating your treatment team, because, you know, you're right on when you said, you know, that when you've worked with clients before, you've created a team around you, which is exactly what you need to do. In fact, when you're working with individuals with eating disorders on an outpatient basis, what you're doing is essentially creating a clinic without walls. So on your treatment team, you will most likely have a therapist as, like, you know, the primary therapist, psychologist. You will also have a nutritionist. You will have a psychiatrist a lot of the time, and you will have a physician that's monitoring. And it's very important for the members of the treatment team to be talking. Now, if that is not working, then it's time for your treatment team to evaluate, well, does she need to go or does he need to go to inpatient or residential? And also to consider if perhaps family-based therapy would be an option as well. So, you know, again, like I said before, is that no two recoveries look the same, but definitely be open and willing to, you know, make those phone calls and try. And even if the first therapist doesn't work out, because just like when you meet people in the street, not everybody's going to click with you, mm-hmm. do not give up hope and throw up your arms and say, well, therapy doesn't work for me, I'm going to walk away. Go to the second therapist, mm-hmm. and you will find a practitioner that you will be able to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think particularly if it's somebody under the age of 18 living in a household, I think the family therapy aspect is really important to consider, because as you noted in your case, it was some of the initial pressures in your family dynamic that, you know, weren't the causative factor, but were possibly a contributing factor. So I think, you know, family therapy I've seen be an extremely effective tool for opening up lines of communication. A lot of those issues, a lot of these issues that we deal with, you know, whether we like it or not, good parents, bad parents, best intended parents, you know, sometimes they set us up for issues that we're not equipped to handle on our own.
Absolutely. And to also remember that eating disorders do not just affect the person. It definitely affects the whole family. You know, I mean, my parents were unbelievable after, as far as helping me get through it. They're my two biggest allies in the world, I would have to say. You know, but again, my eating disorder ended up tearing my family apart, you know, and it was and it just reinforces the fact that, you know, when I had to go through the treatment process, my family needed to heal at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be wrapping up the conversation. We have some other really important things to talk about. We're going to outline some of Joanna's specific strategies and concepts that she outlines in her wonderful book called Life Beyond Your Eating Disorder, that brush over some ideas and some different themes about ways to help somebody recovering from eating disorders cope, ways to think about it, ways to frame it, all based on her personal experience of successfully recovering from an eating disorder. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, and we're going to be back right after
this
break.
There are trillions of cells in your body. When they are well nourished, they support energy levels, stress response, and all major organ systems. Quality whole foods contain intelligent, bioavailable nutrients. This intelligence cannot be mimicked by isolated fractions of vitamins and minerals alone. Choose a Megafood Cold Fusion food state or food-based formula and experience the true quality of radiant health. For more information, call 800-848-2542.
Bridging the gap between nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals. That's the concept behind Zymogen's new exclusive and patented line of formulations, which utilize sophisticated delivery technologies to focus on specific molecular targets. The Zymogen EP line features Immunitix 3-6, a potent ingredient that has demonstrated a measurable ability to prime and enhance immune cell function. Applications include immune system support and support for white blood cell recovery following radiation therapy and other bone marrow affecting treatments. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
For over 10 years, Nordic Naturals has been the world leader in crafting omega-3 fish oils that are great for the body and for the planet. They work one-on-one with researchers and select fishermen to harvest only those fish species that are flourishing. With Nordic Naturals, you get all the benefits of omega-3, a strong heart, clear eyes, and flexible joints, plus the reassurance that their products are environmentally friendly. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
Listen. Blissful silence. The sound of a healthy, balanced digestive system. No rumbling stomach, no loud gurgles, and most of all, no discomfort. Jarrow Formula's Ideal Bowel Support 299V contains a clinically documented probiotic strain that promotes regularity, enhances intestinal comfort, and optimizes immune health. And now you can get a free sample of Ideal Bowel Support 299V when you visit our website at jarrow.com. Jarrow Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass-market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team of 50 includes pharmacists, nutritionists, a clinical herbalist, and a naturopath offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500 Federal News Radio, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero, and my wonderful host, Dana Lake, will be returning next week with another great show related to health and wellness. Today, we have been talking with Joanna Candle, the author of Life Beyond Your Eating Disorder, and we've been talking about eating disorders the entire show, which I think is a really important topic. Joanna has shared with us her personal story and lots of information regarding eating disorders. If you're just tuning in and you want to listen to the show in its entirety, you can go to www.myvillagegreen.com and download the archive show for absolutely free, and that goes for all of our previously recorded shows. It's usually posted about a week after the air shows this Sunday. You can also go right onto iTunes and type in the search bar Essentials of Healthy Living, and you'll get it in a podcastable format that you can download to your iPad or iPod or MP3 player and listen to wherever you would like to go. So in this last segment, we have a lot of great information to cover. Just previously, we were talking about creating a team around you, nutritionists, a psychologist specializing in eating disorders, psychiatrists. So we talked about a lot of those aspects. But, you know, during the break, I was talking to Joanna about the role of other modalities. And you had brought up some really interesting points about things that you've seen helpful as far as other supportive therapies in people's recovery. Maybe you could share those with people.
Absolutely. One of the things that I found to be very, very effective with the women and men that I work with is incorporating, more other types of modalities such as acupuncture, massage therapy, just because it sort of widens that scope. And what I found is individuals that actually do acupuncture before a session will be oftentimes more open to revealing stuff with their therapist, as well as massage therapy has been extremely affected with body image work, because oftentimes individuals with anorexia will in fact be so avoidant of touch because they're so uncomfortable in their skin, the same way with bulimics and binge eaters, that if you can get someone that they trust to work with them and to reincorporate touch, you know, touch therapy is just so important as well. So, you know, definitely, you know, take a look at the traditional treatment team, but definitely be open if you're struggling or if you have a loved one that's struggling to incorporate other modalities as well. They can be very, very effective.
Yeah, and as you shared, some of, you know, when you were first starting with your recovery, you were talking about how your anxiety was so incredibly overwhelming, you know, that you did need some, you know, prescription medications to help deal with the anxiety. And I think that there's a place for everything. You know, that's my approach for any kind of condition. There's a place for pharmaceuticals and Western medicine as well as Eastern medicine. And I think the Eastern modalities like acupuncture and massage definitely encourage people to get more in touch with themselves. It's not just taking a pill to fix the problem. Oftentimes when you're laying on the table getting acupuncture, you become very aware of your body. You become very aware of yourself and where you are in your body and your place in space. And I think that is particularly important for people dealing with body image issues. You know, I just wanted to touch on that because, of course, this show is, you know, directed at more holistic therapies. Uh-huh. I wanted, you know, you wanted to speak to, and I think this is great, you know, talking to people out there right now who might be struggling with an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to, you know, let you go ahead and talk.
Absolutely. You know, for 10 plus years, I struggled with my eating disorder. It was, you know, the first thing I thought about every morning, the last thought I thought about every night, and every other thought in between. It had essentially become who I was. You know, every ounce of my being was wrapped up in this disease. And very early on in my struggle, I knew that, you know, this was the worst thing ever. It was my worst enemy, but yet it was also my best friend. It was, you know, I knew what to expect from it. And when I started the recovery process, you know, I really thought it was going to be just like my eating disorder, black or white, all or nothing. And that's really how I first approached recovery. You know, I set out to go see my nutritionist, and I said to her, I'm going to follow everything that you tell me. I'm going to be the perfect, you know, the perfect quote-unquote student. And I don't think I'd lasted more than a day before it became too overwhelming, too anxiety-provoking, and I totally tripped and fell, quote-unquote. I acted out. And once I acted out, all that negative voice in my head said, see, I told you you couldn't do it, you're not good enough, and, you know, whatever our negative voice says. And so it made me realize that recovery from an eating disorder doesn't happen overnight. You will trip and fall. It's not as simple as not ever doing it again, you know. One thing we need to keep in mind is that you can't become abstinent from your quote-unquote drug of choice, because unfortunately that's sort of the problem anyways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really about balance and moderation and acceptance and realizing that, you know, for so long I thought that I was the exception, that, you know, other people around me could get better, but I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the exception. And if you're listening, you're not the exception either. You know, recovery does happen, and it can happen, and you deserve to be healthy and happy. No one deserves this. You know, whatever that negative voice is trying to tell you, you don't deserve it. So please pick up the phone, you know, find an individual that specializes in eating disorders. Fear is the biggest obstacle in our journey to recovery. And you know what? My recovery was the hardest thing I ever did. I will not make any lies or exaggerations about that, but it was by far the best thing I ever did, because I got me back, you know, and I am truly, truly living my life beyond my eating disorder.
That's great. You talk about some wonderful concepts in your book, things like how many crayons are in your box, and these concepts of floaties and sinkies. And, you know, I mean, you do a lot of visual analogies to help people get these, you know, concepts about using tools to cope as you're going through recovery. Can you elaborate on those a little bit?
Sure. When I first started the treatment process, you know, my therapist would introduce these therapeutic concepts, and I just couldn't get my brain around them because I've always been a very visual person. So since then, I've definitely found other ways for me to for it to be understandable to me. And so ideas like the Sankeys and floaties came up because I was actually in Maryland, and a cousin of mine had his little girl swimming in the pool, and she was wearing water wings, and she was 2 at the time, and you could tell that she had 100% faith that these water wings were going to keep her afloat. And I thought, what a wonderful analogy for those friends and supporters in your life when you're struggling and you're recovering from eating disorders. You know, the eating disorder came at a point in our life where it sort of, you know, kept me afloat. It did, quote unquote, save me at a particular moment. But very quickly, that sinky, that arm floaty, that arm floaty became what I call a sinky. You know, it was trying to pull me down. So when you are going through the recovery process, make sure to take inventory of who those floaties in your life are. And also take inventory to see those people that might be disguised as floaties but are really sinkies, because you want those people that are going to uplift you, that are going to support you, that are going to help you put one foot in front of the other in the treatment process.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point as you go through recovery and you change as a person and address the underlying issues that contributed to the eating disorder, you're going to change, and those relationships and dynamics with other people in your life might change as a result. And, you know, it's important to keep that in mind. Yeah, you write it beautifully in your book. Floaties are those people, places, or things that help keep us afloat when we're inevitably feeling the force that's trying to push us down. Floaties are the things that give us pleasure in life, the things that make us smile. And, you know, I think it's a term that certainly translates to struggling with any kind of issue in your life. But, you know, I think it's a beautiful metaphor. And then talk about the crayons, because I thought that was a great analogy as well.
Absolutely. Well, see, when I started the recovery process, I was very black or white thinking, as are a lot of people with eating disorders. And I think a lot of people in general are very all or nothing. It's either going to be the best day or the worst day. There's no in between. There's no gray. And so I remember thinking that if it wasn't the white crayons, it was the black crayons. And you know what? I mean, when we're kids, we go into school and we're given, you know, that 64-pack of crayons with a little, like, sharpener in the back. You know, well, we have no qualms about using all those colors in the crayon box. So, you know, the analogy of using the crayon box is realizing there's so many other colors in that crayon. Even a black and white picture is actually not just black and white. It's all shades of gray, you know. So recovery for me meant, you know, getting rid of, or not just getting rid, you know, incorporating the black or white, but then also being aware that in life, we have to use all different shades and colors. And so it's very, very important in the recovery process to not be all or nothing.
Yes, I think you even say that now your colors include burnt sienna, marvelous, and purple heart. So right out of your book. Can you talk about resources? You know, if somebody's out there listening and they're looking to reach out or they're wanting to educate themselves more, of course, you have your foundation. But what are the Alliance for Eating Disorder Awareness? What are some other great resources that people can use to reach out to find help?
Absolutely. Well, definitely, if you want to hop on our website, which is very easy, it's allianceforeatingdisorders.com. That's always a really great resource. There's also the National Eating Disorders Association, as well as the Eating Disorders Coalition. And I really do encourage everybody to hop onto their website as well. And if you or a family member has struggled with an eating disorder, I really encourage you to get involved with the Eating Disorders Coalition. They are our advocacy arm in the eating disorder community, and they're advocating for the first piece of legislation, the first eating disorder piece of legislation, called the FREED Act, which is the Federal Response to Eliminating Eating Disorders. My biggest message is don't wait to get better. You deserve so much more than to succumb and waste more time with your eating disorder. If you're someone that's struggling, go on one of these websites, you know, make some phone calls. If you're a friend or family member, do the same thing, and also to take care of you. And I do also want to just say thank you to those family members and friends that support the people that are going through it. It's an awful road, but never lose hope and know that recovery is a possibility, and there is life beyond
your eating disorder. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joanna. Really appreciate you being on the show today. That was Joanna Kendall, author of Life Beyond Your Eating Disorder and founder of the Alliance for Eating Disorder Awareness. This is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, and we're out of time. I'll talk to you all in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top-quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.